Thank you, thank you. I tell you, I travel once a month. Reverend Howard Caesar lets me out. And I get to go to other centers and churches around the country. And you never know what you're going to get in a church band. You guys got a great church band. Let me just tell you right now. So I'm going to just let you know, I do have true redneck bona fides. I'm from a little town of 400 people in Oklahoma. I actually have an Uncle Bubba. So two farmers, Bubba and Zeke. Bubba goes to check on Zeke, and he's going over there one evening. He sees that there's a light on in the barn. He sneaks up, and he looks in the door. What's going on in Zeke's barn? And his buddy Zeke, who he's known for 50 years, is doing something very strange. He's standing in front of his John Deere, and he begins to do a strip tease. Takes off one of under overall strap, then the other one, and he's, you know, and then he gets the shirt, and then Bubba can't stand anymore. He walks in and says, "Zeke, what the heck are you doing?" And Zeke was very embarrassed. And he said, "Well, Bubba, the missus and I have been having some marital relation problems. I went to the doctor, and he said I should do something sexy to attract her." You're welcome, and I'm sorry. So, planting seeds of peace. I was preparing to share this talk with you. Several, just did a lot of research and finding different places and seeds of wisdom that other people have given us on peace. So I want to give you a couple of quotes here. Mother Teresa of Calcutta: "If we have no peace, it is because we have forgotten that we belong to each other." Moshe Dayan: "If you want to make peace, you don't talk to your friends, you talk to your enemies." And Lao Tzu, this one's very famous, I'm sure you know it, the Taoist: "If there is to be peace in the world, there must be peace in the nations. And if there is to be peace in the nations, there must be peace in the cities. If there is to be peace in the cities, there must be peace between neighbors. If there is to be peace between neighbors, there must be peace in the home. And if there is to be peace in the home, there must be peace in the heart." And that's really what I want to talk about today as we begin to plant seeds of peace. Where are the places that we are not experiencing peace in our own heart and mind? And this is one of our own. I call him one of our own. He was not really a new thought, but so influential on our Dr. Ernest Holmes, Ralph Waldo Emerson. He said this: "Nothing can bring you peace but yourself. Nothing but the triumph of principles." Isn't that what we're about? So I'm going to do something quite out there, more than the tractor joke, I promise. Really controversial. I hope you guys are up for this, but I want to talk about religion. Can we do that on a Sunday morning in a church? I don't know, at a center. Talk about religion. I'm going to talk about, I tend to teach from my own personal life. Mary Manna Morrissey is a good friend and a mentor of mine, and she told me that every minister early on in their ministry decides either I'm going to teach from my life experience or not. And I have a huge 12-step background, and so I have been healed by people telling their experience and sharing their strength and hope around how spiritual principle works. So that's the way I teach. So I will be sharing this is a deep personal experience for me. So I want to set this up. I'm going to be talking about religion, but it doesn't necessarily have to be about religion for you. A few years ago, this was before we did the reintegration of the two members, two sides of the family of religious science. I was at the United Conference, and we had a conversation around, are we Christian, are we not Christian? This happens every so often. About a third of the people in the room said, yes, we're definitely Christian. A third of the people in the room said, we are definitely not Christian. And a third of the people in the room said, we don't really care. We just want to hear it. We want to practice and learn. So I have a feeling that's probably where we are in this room, too. Maybe a third of you have a really strong identity with Christianity. Maybe a third of you have a really strong disidentity. And a third are like, eh, it's okay. So hopefully that this will have some meaning for you. I want to say this. My relationship with Christianity has been difficult. And it has been the very place where peace has been planted in my life. And so I'm sharing this story with you today not to in any way influence your understanding or maybe some understanding, but not your your stance or your relationship with this religion. Many of you come from different paths, different faiths, and we, if you haven't gotten that already, we honor all paths. But what I've noticed in New Thought and in Unity and in Science of Mind is that we usually honor all paths except the one that hurt us. And that's what I'm talking about. I want to talk about how we plant a seed of peace in whatever it is, whether it was religion, family relations, life. Where were the places that we were harmed and we are not at peace? So every year I go back to Avant, Oklahoma, a town of 400 people. My parents are still living, and my brothers live there, and their children, and now, you know, grandchildren. Lots and lots of gots there in Avant, Oklahoma. I come from a Pentecostal Methodist family. We won't go into all that, but my dad was a Methodist. My mom was Pentecostal, and I got both. My older brother is a Pentecostal pastor. Every Sunday morning, I'm doing New Thought Church, and he's doing Pentecostal Church. I don't know what my mom put in the oatmeal, but clearly something about church. We're often talking about maybe the same thing, but very different ideas and different ways of understanding it. About 10 years ago, we were having a conversation. It got rather heated, and my dad just said, "That's it. We're not talking about religion anymore. We're just not. When we're all together, we won't talk about it." And so we've abided by my father's wishes for this last decade, probably more, probably 15 years. And this last Christmas, we were abiding by that, but we somehow got on the topic of generational poverty and some racial ideas, and got to be very heated. My brother and I had very, very different ideas and understanding of what was going on in the world. And I remember this feeling of just being so unpeaceful. And at one point, I actually stood during the conversation, and I gestured, and I made my point. And he's a Pentecostal preacher. He's good at that. So his voice had gotten louder, and there was so much tension and anger in me. And I remember what my dad said, and I just stopped. I just stopped and sat down. It was painful. And you see, what I realize is that what that happened at that moment, and this is just last December, this is a very, very long, long journey for me. At 6 years old, I remember this memory of being in our little country Methodist church, very evangelical, very conservative. The kids would come out after Sunday school, and they would recite a Bible verse or act out a little story or sing a song for the grown-ups. And this is one of the songs we used to sing. I'll just give you some of the lyrics. "Life was filled with guns and war. All of us got trampled on the floor. I wish we'd all been ready. Children died. The days grew cold. A piece of bread could buy a bag of cold. I wish we'd all been ready. But there's no time to change your mind. The sun has come, and you've been left behind." At 6 years old, we sang this. That year, I remember, I probably sang it earlier, but I remember standing up in church singing this song, "It's Too Late, You've Been Left Behind." I came home from school. My mom didn't work at that time, and she wasn't home. And I couldn't see anybody on the block. I was terrified because I knew that I had been left behind, that Jesus had returned. And those who were worthy and acceptable in God's sight had been raptured, and I had been left behind. And I remember when my mom came home, I knew that I shouldn't let her know what I had feared, because then that would let her know that I really thought that I was unworthy. So I kind of sucked it up, but I'd been crying. She knew something was up. I don't think we've ever talked about that. It's religious abuse, truly. It's to do that to children. So I'm not here to say that the peace that I'm coming to is, and it may be with you in a relationship, it's not to approve of things that are done. But this is where I came from. And growing up gay in that world, there was absolutely no place for me. And that was a whole other story, but it took a long time. I was at Oral Roberts University, because I thought, that's where I'll go and I'll finally get this thing figured out. I'll be really good then. I told the very first person that in my life that I was gay, I was 19, and she said, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to drive to Colorado Springs, where my former youth pastor has started a church, and he will pray for you to be delivered of the spirit, of the demon. So, sure, let's do that. So we got in my 1976 Chevy Malibu, and we drove through the night to Colorado Springs, and this young pastor and his wife, they put us up, and the next day we went to this little storefront where he had started this little church, and he prayed for me to not be gay, to pray the gay away. It didn't take. And that was Ted Haggard. Though many of you may not know, but Ted Haggard went on to become, he's been on Oprah several times. He was the president of the American Association of Evangelicals, that little church that he started in that forefront, that storefront, had about 50 people, grew to be about 14,000 people. And at the height of his ministry, it turns out he was having sex with his male massage therapist. Yeah. So when that all broke, a friend of mine called me. She said, do you think he caught it from you? Maybe. I don't know. But I say all that to just give you some insight into, I don't know how many of you have any experience with the evangelical Christian movement. I don't know, but you can't not have experience of it in our world. You know, the whole Prop 8 thing. I mean, it's around us, and it has been very troubling in my life for many years. My family is still very much in that frame. And so when I was 22, I kind of left it behind completely. Just, I don't want to talk about it. And I never quite let God go, but I didn't know what it was. And headlong into singing in bars and alcoholism. And then at the age of 28, several things happened. One was that Reverend Marty Bacher, do you know Marty? He came into this little bar that I was singing at in Dallas, Texas, a little gay piano bar. And then I noticed him listening to my music and applauding. And on my break, he comes and put a $5 bill in the tip jar. And I could tell he wanted to talk to me. I thought he was going to ask me out. And instead, he asked me to come sing at his church. And I thought, do you know where you are? Because I had no experience of ministers that went to gay piano bars to hire musicians for their church. I found my people. So that was, I've been coached to not say how many years it actually was, because it makes me unrelatable to anybody who's in their 20s. So I'm supposed to say, that was more than 15 years ago. It was 22 years ago. And so I've been a part of Science of Mind and the New Thought Movement for 22 years. And I began to heal my allergic reaction to Christianity. Reverend Petra, Dr. Petra Weldes, who was my teacher for so many years and still my prayer partner, we're very close, who wrote the book that I believe you all are working with Dr. Christian Sorensen, The Joyous Freedom Journal. She also had some kind of troubled history with Christianity, and she made a strong intention to heal it. So we did things like metaphysical communion service, and sometimes people would walk out. We would do, why? And then she was the one that gave me that language, that why is it we honor all paths except the one that hurt us? And so she began to kind of push at that little wound in our community there and on me, you know. And I began to feel, oh, maybe there's another way to be with this. And I began to study, and I learned so much about what was and what wasn't Christianity. I'm still studying that. There's a wonderful contemporary theologian named Brian McLaren. He has a new book called A New Christianity, 10 Questions That Are Shaping the Faith. Fabulous book. And he talks about this. And he uses it in a line diagram, but I'll just kind of do it in the air. You know, the first line, which is Eden, perfect experience, perfect relationship with God. Then we have you know what this is? The fall. Thank you, Dr. Heather. We have the fall from grace. And then we live in this place of condemnation, another horizontal line. And then there comes a why. We either choose salvation and go back up, or we don't, and we go to hell. If we go up, then we go have another, and then we go back to heaven. And those are six lines that describe the way most, all evangelicals and most Christians understand their faith. Does that sound kind of familiar to you? Yeah. That's not in the Bible. Did you know that? Do you know what that is? That's Plato. That is the Greco-Roman worldview. Remember Plato's theory of ideals? That's what that is. That there's this ideal world. Humankind is fallen. Remember the slaves and the prisoners in the cave? And we're seeing this imperfect play that's being on. We don't understand that there's this perfect ideal, and someday we'll get back to that. That is not Christianity. It's not Jesus. So I began to learn what this was, and then I felt this also the strong thing I missed. I miss it sometimes in New Thought, in Science of Mind, a devotional path. I had so much pain in that religion in my youth, but I also had so much joy and depth of experience, and I loved to worship. And I was told, we don't worship the God out there. We don't do that in Science of Mind. It's the God within. But I still missed it. And so I began to study in the integral movement. Kiln Wilber talks about the three faces of God. I don't know if you're familiar with this teaching, but it's really lovely. The first, it's the three parts of speech. The first person, I am the place where the divine is. The second is the thou relationship, that worshipful piece. The third is the all that is, the it. So all spiritual traditions, according to Wilber, emphasize one or two of these aspects, these relationships with the divine. You know which ones we favor here? The first and the third, which is very Eastern. It's a very Hindu and Buddhist idea that we favor the first and the third, but not so much that second. That is a dualistic religion relationship. Generally, the three Abrahamic faiths, Islam, Judaism, and Christianity, are dualistic in the way they're usually understood. We're here, God is there. So, what I began to understand and explore was that I wanted to be integrated. I wanted to be in relationship with the divine in a way that fit my soul, that made sense to my mind, that I had a place to be in a lineage of tradition. And I found out that it's here. It really is. Ernest Holmes, if you read in the textbook, he has this beautiful prayer. It says, my creator, I am complete in thee. He understood that we have this need to be in relationship with God, even though we know that an aspect of God is impartial. The law just simply responds, yes. There is another aspect of the divine that is anything but impersonal. It does nothing but just love us. And I needed to have a relationship with God in order to feel complete in my spiritual walk. So all of that was happening, and I got a call. I had graduated ministerial school. I'd been working for a couple of years with Reverend Lisa out in Reno. That was where Dr. Heather and I were on the committee for that minister's convocation in Mexico. It's where we kind of cooked this up. We've been planning for me to come here for 3 years. It finally happened today. I know. I've had a lot going on. Right around that time, I left that convocation to go to Houston. I had been there one time, but Reverend Howard Caesar invited me to come work with him. So I left Mexico. I went there to interview with the board. And Petra was a good coach during this time. She said, you know, it might be a better fit for you because Unity has a stronger Christology. It's more Christian. It's identically, philosophically. I don't know if you know much about our New Thought movement. Unity is the largest denomination. Absolutely philosophically identical to Science of Mind. Slightly different in the flavor and emphasis. So I really didn't like Unity churches as much as I like Science of Mind centers. I really didn't. But I went, and I remember I was in the interview with the board, and I thought, maybe there's something here for me, something to learn and integrate. That's the word. Maybe there's something I can recapture in a healthy way, heal myself here. But, you know, I thought, it's not going to work. I mean, what I bring this, like, big musical energy. Do you ever sing I Release and I Let Go, the Ricky Byers song? I mean, at the workshop today, I'll show you how we do that at my church now. But I like to cut loose. Sometimes my Pentecostal roots show. That's all I'm saying. I want to have this free experience. And that church in Houston was a little buttoned up. Big, big church. And I just thought, they may not want me. And in the interview with the board, I had that thought. I thought, maybe this isn't going to work because I have this idea and this is sort of the culture I feel like I'm really, you know, a part of. And this is kind of this different thing. And at that moment, Reverend Howard Caesar said, as if he were reading my thoughts, he said, Michael, what we want is someone who will come in and begin to shift the culture in our community, that people will begin to feel free to express themselves. They'll feel inspired to stand and clap their hands. And I thought, well, crap, I guess I'm coming here. So, so I moved to Houston. You know, I just uprooted my life less than 2 years before to move to Reno. I uprooted my life again. I moved to Houston where I knew no one, in a church that I didn't know if it would be a fit or not. Never worked in. I'd sung and spoken at Unity churches, never been a part of a Unity community. I'm not sure. And I will tell you that the healing has become so profound in my life. The healing of my relationship. I don't think I ever had a problem with Jesus. It's the religion that was formed in his name is where my problem has been. One of the first people, one of my dearest friends that I met in Houston, Dr. Jill Carroll, also an Oral Roberts University alumnus, and she is a world religions professor at Rice. And now she considers herself to be a secular humanist, but lover of religions. And she taught me so much. We would have coffee Mondays at Starbucks, and she would explain to me that Christianity has always been plural. You know what that means? There are many Christianities. There are many understandings of who Jesus was, what his message is, and the meaning for humanity. It's always been that way. But there's the orthodoxy, the people who need to contain it, have always stamped out all heretics. We're heretical in our approach to Christianity, let me just tell you. And yet, what I'm so convinced of is that it is time for a new conversation around the table about who Jesus is and was, what our relationship to him and his teachings are, and how we can move forward. We're living in a postmodern age, and those old ideas are just not working anymore. So I began to explore new thoughts, relationship. There's a huge section in the textbook where Jesus talks about Ernest Holmes. Yeah, right. Ernest Holmes talks about the teachings of Jesus. And it teaches. I mean, his writing on the prodigal is amazing. And this is what I've come to understand. This is why I'm so excited. New thought is the only non-dual Christian tradition in the 2,000-year history of the religion. What I mean by that is at the core of our belief is that we are not separate from God. We are one with God. There has been no fall. That we are, all that must be happening in our lives is the revelation of our wholeness. So I want to read something to you. Well, let me just say this. I'm getting ahead of myself. 22 minutes. How are we doing? Okay. When I was in Reno, there's this Ricky Byers song I love to sing called All Fades Into God. And it never quite landed. You know about this, Diane. You know, when you're trying to create a song for performance, and sometimes the arrangement just never quite, just doesn't quite end the way I need it to end. And I thought, how do I fix it? And I had an idea. I had seen preachers do this thing where they kind of sing Bible verses. I thought, well, maybe I can find some good Bible verses. So I'm singing the song, and then I start doing that at the end. I say, you know, all things work together for the good of them that love God. Oh, that felt good. And then, neither height nor depth nor anything on earth can separate us from the love of God. Yeah, that felt good. And then I thought, behold, behold, I make all things new. All things new. And then went back in. Yeah. Oh, so that's what I'm getting to. Thank you. So I knew where those first two Bible verses were from. I memorized chapters and chapters of the Bible as a kid and a teenager. I couldn't remember where that particular verse was from. Behold, I make all things new. So I went and I found it. It was in Revelations. Oh, that's a weird place to find it. And I'm reading it, the 21st chapter. It's describing the new Jerusalem descending to earth, describing this new city. The ideal, the perfect, coming to the human, the mundane. There's a meeting. Something is happening. As I'm reading the verse, I begin to weep. Weep, sobs, tears. And I realize this was not describing some city. This is describing my life. This is the restoration of my life. This is my sobriety. This is my integration of the devotional path. This is God healing me. And so I'm reading these Bible verses in a non-dualistic, personal way, and I'm being healed. And so what I've found is that when we can approach these sacred scriptures from this place of absolute oneness, miracles can occur. There's a proof scripture in evangelical Christianity. It is this. Jesus answered, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. And if you really know me, you will know my Father. From now on, you do know him and you have seen him. No one comes to the Father except by me." This is the exclusionary clause in the way most people practice Christianity. That those good Buddhists who are being good Buddhists, sorry, hell. Yeah. Good Jews who are practicing good Judaism, too bad. Although sometimes they think there's a special dispensation there because Jesus was a nice Jewish boy. So, incidentally, we have a beautiful Italian wooden sculpture, life-size, of Jesus, not in our old sanctuary, the pyramid. And he's not on a cross. He's kind of, some people call him the flying Jesus, but he's kind of doing this. And a few weeks ago, there's a woman, we have quite a few Jewish folks who attend our community, and a new woman had come, and she was saying, you know, I'm really loving the teaching here, but I'm still struggling a bit with the Jesus thing. And I just said, listen, he was a nice Jewish boy, and look at him, he's going, hey, come to the party, it's fine. So one of the 10 questions Brian McLaren asked, is Christianity going to be exclusionary? Do you have to be a Christian to be in relationship with the divine? The answer is unequivocally no, you do not. And there's a, Marcus Borg actually is where I got this interpretation of that proof scripture is this. Jesus said, I am the way. These people had spent 3 years with him, good Jewish men, following the law. And he said, there's a deeper way of being in relationship with reality. I'm the way. Are you watching? Are you paying attention? This is how we do it. When we move in those waters of oneness, people can be healed. Do you hear me? When Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life, he's not saying you have to believe anything. You have to live everything. So, I have a workshop this afternoon. I'm going to get to why that's why I'm going to say that about right now. What I've come to understand is that a larger perspective always allows integration. The small mind wants details. We want to figure it all out. We want to put people in a box. And we'll just say the right words, and then we'll have it figured out. Our founder knew better. This is from the chapter on treatment in the textbook. Under the subheading, let us not fool ourselves. I love this man. And he's talking about, he says this. This is not a process of saying peace when there is no peace. We don't lie to ourselves in this teaching. He said, this matter of self-deception about the truth of a demonstration is the most prolific field for delusion in our system of thought. There is nothing in our teaching which calls for lying to ourselves and others. When we have declared something healed and it doesn't heal, what are we doing? Thank you. I've often struggled with the Ernest Holmes' We Believe statement where he says, we believe in the control of conditions through the power of this mind. I don't know that I'm equipped to control conditions very much in my life. Not the me that I am. I need a higher power working through me. And Dr. Edward Villiun finally gave me the key to that statement by our own Dr. Ernest Holmes when he said this, the only condition I need ever control is that of my own divided mind. They're healed. They're not healed. They're healed. That, you see that? That is what we must heal. That's the condition we must control, is we must know our truth, and we treat until we demonstrate. I had declared an intention of wholeness in my life. And yet here was this place when my brother is speaking a different point of view or perspective, my unwholeness was just up. It was so clear. My mind was divided. I believe we're all one. And yet here are two men who both love God and who are trying to make a difference in the world, who are seeing the exact same set of circumstances in our culture and having completely opposite understanding and solution. So I got quiet in that conversation. We go on in to say the prayer for dinner, and he comes up to me. He's a big bear of a guy, and he put his arms around me. And he said, Michael, if I knew how to fix all these problems, I hope you know I would. And in that moment, I realized we truly are one. I had just come off a retreat in January, looking at the next big chapter of my ministry. And I thought, why am I wanting to move in this particular direction? What is it that's in me to do this? Is it my ego? Am I trying to like be some famous person? Am I trying to like, is it a claim that I'm looking for? And what I came with was one phrase. I want to make it better. I want to use my life, my gifts, my talents, my time to make it better. What's it? New Thought, my local church, humanity, my city of Houston. I want to use my time to make it better. And here my Pentecostal brother, who completely disagrees with everything I'm saying, he's putting his arms around me, he's telling me he loves me, and he's saying, I want to make it better. I began to see wholeness revealed. Where there is peace in the heart, there can be peace in the home. Where there can be peace in the home, there can be peace in the neighborhood. And where we have peace in the neighborhood, we can have peace in our cities and in our nation and in the world. My brothers and my sisters, your job is to heal your divided mind. Find those places, maybe it's not religion for you, that was for me. Find those places where, and here's how you know where your divided mind is, where do you become fearful or angry? And especially, where's the pattern of fearfulness and anger? That's where God's trying to become real in your life. That's where someplace you're not quite, something's divided there. When we can integrate our beliefs, have peace in the heart and mind, plant those seeds, let them come to fruition, then we can give our gift to the world. So I do invite you, whatever your plans were this afternoon, to change them. The workshop that I'm giving this afternoon is it's about purpose. We do a lot of success and happiness workshops. I believe they're not worthy of our soul. Those are great goals for, I don't know, some people, not for us. We're bigger than just trying to get our own happiness and success. Do you know what I think we're really after in this lifetime? Fulfillment. We are each uniquely gifted. We are given into this world for a certain time, and even though we're birthless, deathless, changeless beings, we are going to be born, we're going to change, and we're going to die in this human experience. And while we're here, we are called to bring our gifts to the fore, to offer who we are into the world. And when we do that, I believe we're fulfilled, and I believe happiness and success are byproducts. I have spent the last 15-plus years of my life learning how to integrate my own divided heart and mind and offer my gifts into the world, and I think I have some insights into that for you this afternoon on how you can use your time and your, whether it be work for vocation or avocation, how you can give your gift into the world and have greater fulfillment, greater success and happiness, because you are here to do amazing things. I'm going to invite the band to come back.